Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
The Cinema Specialists are back, and today we are doing another one of our top 10 lists. So there was a little bit of a gap there, right? We did Island movies last time in honor of the Survivor season getting started, and we thought we were going to be able to start last week, but things changed, and here we are. We're going to be doing the top 10 underrated horror movies because it's October. It's the first Monday of October, so technically we're still in the first week. We made it just under the wire. And here we are. John and I each have our own top 10 lists, and so we're going to be rolling through. I was talked out of my number one literally last night. John and I were sharing these back and forth. For everybody who followed along with the Island movie podcast, you know that we were really struggling through the Island movie podcast. Well, for underrated horror, you kind of fall into the same boat, right? Because something that I think is underrated, other people might love. You get your cinephiles who really love certain movies that other people haven't even heard of. So it's kind of hard to figure out what is technically an underrated horror movie. So for me, I originally had It Follows at number one, and I was talked out of it last night. I was told, no, that movie's too popular, even though everybody I bring it up to doesn't know what it is. I think the thing is, if you live in California, if you live in a city, you're going to get people who are a little bit more into these types of movies. You move to a place like Florida, these people don't even know that that movie exists. So I just wanted to throw that out there. That was originally supposed to be my number one, but I was talked out of it, even though I still think it's supremely underrated. If it's not one of your, what, top 10 horror movies, then it's underrated. Do I even have it in my own top 10? Let's see.
Now the truth comes out. Like, is it actually in that top 10 there, Phil?
Now I actually have to make sure I have it in there before I start heckling. I mean, everybody else, if I have it at 11, then that just means, that just proves it even further. I literally have it at number 11.
Wow. Wow. But that's kind of proven. Like, I could classify into this list. And the worst part about you last minute changing this is I had watched all of the movies on both of our lists until right now.
And you don't know what my number 10
is. I don't even know what the last one is. I don't know what you're replacing it with. So I don't even, I can't even, maybe I got lucky and I watched it. Who knows? Rated is such a hard term to throw around, like you were saying, right? Like, who is this underrated to? And we did spend a bit of time going back and forth. Oh, are we talking about like underrated movies within like that horror niche and like the people who really love horror movies? If we did that, literally no movie's underrated because there's this like niche market for every single one.
Especially with horror, right?
Yes.
Because horror, like, you have people who will sit there and will praise certain horror movies that, like, my dad's a huge horror fan, and there's so many movies from the 80s and the 70s and stuff that he's never seen, but he loves horror movies. He just doesn't love those types of horror movies a lot of the time. So, like, yeah, every horror movie, that horror movies generally are cult following type movies. There's very few that are mainstream. So, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's why horror is one of the longest lasting genres and one of the most impactful genres, though, is because of its cult status, right? And even in the streaming age where cult films don't, you know, operate the same way, where they're propelled by DVD sales and everything like that, horror movies still find their cult homes. Like, when you're looking at like everything on streaming, the ones people care about are the horror movies. And I know from personal experience, you'll sit down one night and you'll just like be scrolling through the horror movies and you're like, I've never heard of this movie. And you know someone who's like, oh no, that movie's amazing. You need to watch it. And that's just the way the genre works. So when we're saying underrated horror movies, it's really hard to completely classify it. But these are horror movies that are a little lesser known, aren't talked about as much outside of horror circles. So I guess we can say it's just more of like a generalized underrated, because either they're like a little older, maybe they're a little more indie. But
once I removed It Follows, I feel like my underrated becomes very clear. So, but I do understand what you're saying with everything. I really do think, though, and I'll throw up some comments here, because we have Sluka S. Highly suggest the horror YouTuber Possessed by Horror. Haven't watched him or her. Also, Final Destination 5 is Omega underrated. Like, yeah, a lot of the terminally online horror fans of the Final Destination franchise rank it top 2 out of the 5 films, mainly because of the epic ending, but Final Destination 5 isn't that mainstream like 1, 2, and 3. So that's exactly kind of what you were just talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're even in like these franchises, and that's what's going to happen with my new number 10, which just makes the cut at the last second. You get these franchises where sometimes there's one or two movies that are really well revered, and then everything else is just thought of as shit. And sometimes that makes those underrated, even if they're not necessarily that good. Like, they don't have to be the best in the franchise, but sometimes underrated because of that. Another one, I actually like this one. House of Wax is also underrated. It popped off in 2005, but it deserves its flowers, and a lot of Gen Z people probably aren't aware of it. House of Wax, I almost rewatched The Devil's Rejects too. To get me in on that one. But then I remembered that it is technically like a sequel to House of a Thousand Corpses. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't want to rewatch House of a Thousand Corpses to watch The Devil's Rejects. But I remember liking The Devil's Rejects and not liking House of a Thousand Corpses, but whatever. I'll get to it one day. So those didn't make my list. All right, John, I'm gonna break your suspense right away. Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
What do you think it is? Now that you know it's in a franchise, what do you think it is?
I have no idea.
Couldn't even guess, huh?
Well, because I know like what franchise you do praise a sequel for, but I know that's already on your list too. So I'm not sure what this might be.
That is true. Yeah, there is another one. Okay, so here we go. Starting it off. Boom. You see it at the bottom?
Oh, Interesting.
Yeah. I'm going for it. So anyway, so anybody who can't see it and is going, all right, just tell me the damn movie. I have replaced, I'm going with Saw 2. Saw 2. So Saw 1, I think, is an absolute classic. Saw 1 is such a great movie. It is, you know, it's filmed, we always talk about it, it's filmed like those anti-piracy ads from back in the early 2000s. It's so ridiculous. It's so over the top. It really elevated, though, this torture porn genre and really brought it to something else. And it had a bunch of spinoffs that were really, really shitty. But one that is not shitty is this one. This movie, okay, the acting, sure, it's over the top. It's not that good. That's kind of what you expect from a lot of horror movies, though. And I will say this is the one genre where acting doesn't really matter to me all that much, as you'll see in some of my movies coming up. But the thing with this movie is they were still being creative with their deaths and with the traps. And I like the idea of now it's an entire group of people who have to get out of this situation by each of them overcoming their certain, you know, obstacle or whatever it is. That's a different twist on what the first one was. And the whole safe place idea of this movie really, really worked for me. It's one of those like reveals at the end where you say, wow, that actually made sense. They weren't just throwing shit at the wall and hoping it would stick. So look, a lot of these movies are bad. We both watched Saw X last year. I think we did a podcast on it too. So you should check that one out. We love Saw 1. I think we talked about that before for patrons or something. Who knows? But I will say Saw 2, supremely underrated. Even if, like, this is to me is a 3-star movie, right? But most people just disregard this movie. It's Saw, and then there's the other ones that you just watch to watch. But I think that this is one of the best sequels of those types of franchises. I think it's super entertaining. So we got Thomas McGee and Raptor in here saying, hey, hey, hope you guys like Saw too, because that's what we're starting this podcast with. John, does this shock you?
A little. But I've never seen Saw 2.
Really? Oh, it's really, it holds up, man.
I haven't spent a lot of time exploring the Saw franchise. Like, obviously, I've seen the first Saw a couple times, and we covered Saw X, like you said. Saw 2 is an interesting one, though, because I think Saw 2 is really what catapulted every, like, Saw, yes, Saw was a phenomenon. Saw 2 is what turned this franchise into, like, this long-lasting torture porn franchise that it became. Because this really did, from what I understand, changed the way that the movie worked compared to the first one. Like, it obviously has like some of the more iconic moments, like the needle pit and things like that.
Oh yeah.
And but because of the fast turnaround and everything, I'm also pretty sure, I don't know if this is substantiated or not, but it's just like a long-standing rumor maybe with the movie that Saw 2 was actually like a spec script for a different movie and they turned it into a Saw movie.
I believe that. And like, this is where you start to get into the whole, like, Amanda is the apprentice of John. And like, I totally believe that this would be a spec script. I mean, you have to think about this. So here's what's crazy, right? First movie budget, $1 to $1.2 million, makes 103.9. They make the second one for $4 million. So they don't make this for some massive budget. Yeah. They make it for $4 million and it makes $152.9 million. And that's what just said, okay, cool. These Saw movies, we're just going to keep making them. Forget it. Yep. We're just going to keep going. So I think it works. We got Raptor here. I saw Saw 2 with my buddies in high school. It was pretty fun. It is fun. And this was a perfect blockbuster, pull it out of the $5 bin and buy it instead of renting it for $3.99, because some mom probably bought it for like her teenage kid, watched it, said this is the most disgusting thing, and brought it back to Blockbuster, and then Blockbuster sells it for $5. So this was the perfect movie. I think I still own it out here. I haven't watched it in a little bit, but I remember it very vividly. And I remember the twists and I remember the turns, and it's a fun idea. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if you're right that this was a spec script based on something else. So anyway, the needle scene is so ridiculous. It is so ridiculous. But I like it. It's a good movie.
But I do enjoy the whole like group survival thing, and it will play into one of my films later on too. So I can talk about that aspect of the film a little bit more later.
Yep. Cool. All right. Well, that's my number 10. What do you got?
My number 10, I rewatched it this week, and I have definitively decided it's actually one of my favorite horror movies, and it would be higher on this list had IndieWire not dropped their like top 75 horror movies like 2 weeks ago and put this at number one.
Yeah, so they're trying so hard.
I had to be a little more tentative with my placement on it. but I'm going with 1981's Possession.
All right. I just rewatched it. I didn't rewatch it. I just watched it because me and John had shared lists and we had talked about it. And he said, I'm going to put Possession on there. And I was like, okay, cool. Here's my thing with this. I understand it's a really good movie. Like, I gave it 3.5 stars. I was really entertained the entire time. Here's my thing. When you're making these lists and stuff, you can't just do The Shining and Rosemary's Baby and shit like that. Like, I get that. But you don't have to try so hard. Like, sometimes you just have to pick the classics. And this was so blatantly, to me, when I was watching this movie, I was like, oh my God, they wrote this article. They put Possession at number one and they all walked around patting each other on the back. Like, wow, we did it. We put Possession and we finally did it. It's like the first person who put, you know, Gene Dielman at number one instead of Citizen Kane or Vertigo or Tokyo Story or any of those movies. They decided Gene Dielman is now the one. And everybody goes, oh my God, we have to go see that. It was like they wanted this movie to be there so that they could be, oh, I saw that on IndieWire and that's why I went and did it. So look, I really like this movie. I just think putting it at number one, yeah, okay. That's a little, what's the thing where you, you know, you do the thing to yourself? You know what I'm talking about. You saw the hand motion. That's what IndieWire, to me, was doing a little bit of there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to dive into this too much because it is the movie we're covering on the Patreon this week.
It is.
We won't dive into it too much. But all in all, I think this is one of the best horror movies depicting divorce and, like, the struggle between, like, these people in a relationship who are just at a point where they're done with each other and like the different ebbs and flows of that process and how like all the emotional highs and lows of it all. Sam Neill, fantastic as Mark, but I mean, this is Isabella Gianni's movie.
Dude, she's like, ridiculous in this movie.
Her performance is absolutely spectacular. One of the greatest physical performances of all time. Seriously, if you haven't checked this out, do it because this
it's crazy that she didn't. Well, oh, so she's Margot in Queen.
She's Margot in Queen Margot.
Oh, shit. Okay. My life makes so much more sense now. Yeah. I was thrown off because of the German aspect of all the, or not the German, the French aspect of all this because she speaks English in this movie. Mm-hmm. Dude. No wonder. Oh, my God. Yeah. She's Queen Margot. She is so freaking good in this movie. Like, and I didn't like this movie as much as you did. But she's just so damn good in this movie. Like that performance, the subway scene is absolutely ridiculous. I paused it after to go to the bathroom. My wife goes, so you like in your movie? And like, you could tell she's just reacting to those noises. And I was like, yeah, honestly, it's crazy. Yeah. It's just, she's so, I don't know. What a performance.
It's so good. It's one of those things where it's like, it's set in West Germany and that plays into the theme of it all a lot. It's artistically like gorgeous. But I mean, one thing you said, Phil, was like, this is more of a drama than a horror. And I get that opinion, but like, there are definitely some aspects of this that like elevate it for me to one of the best body horror movies ever made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had put in my review that I don't really think it's a horror movie. And then you were like, but there's creatures and there's this. And it's like, look, I get that it's a horror movie, but to me, like, I didn't find it's the first hour and 10 minutes of this movie, like, isn't scary. Or maybe it's the first hour, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, they go to the little apartment and you're like, oh, what the hell is going on? And I understand that there's a lot of slow burn horror and stuff like that. But to me, I was like, this is kind of more of just like, it's kind of like self-mutilation, right? Like that's kind of what was happening here where you get
the electric carving knife scene.
Yeah, dude.
My brutal. God.
Oh, and even Sam Neill on his bender. I mean, there's a lot of really good moments, but the visuals, when you actually do start to get into the creatures, that's something else. I just thought the creatures were going to be, thought it was going to be more of like an actual like creature flick, not like there's just creatures who are there. So that's what threw me off a little bit. It is a very entertaining movie. It may sneak into my top 50 horror movies. I could actually look at that list. Maybe we got to just go through our top 50 horror movies at some point. And just let people know what the hell we're working with.
Too, I have realized over the last.
Well, you've also watched a lot more recently. So
I've watched like almost 50 horror movies in the last like 3 weeks. So yeah, I've been through it lately.
All right. What do we got? Number nine. So
it's me, right? It's me at number nine. And my number nine is probably the lowest quality film on my list. And I think it, like, in horror circles, it's starting to pick up a little bit more. It's gotten a little more attention. It's spawned a series somehow with some varying degrees of quality out of the films, I would say, by which I mean, for a long time, the first movie in this franchise was the only good one until the fourth one came out last year and was like surprisingly good. That's Hell House LLC from 2015. It's a found
footage. I saw this on your list. I'd never heard of it.
It's a found footage movie. And my story of how I came across this movie is a little wild. My roommate really loves found footage horror movies. So much so that he'll just like go on Amazon and watch every found footage horror movie. And a few years ago, he watched this and he loved it so much. He had to show it to literally everyone. That year, I saw this movie 4 times because he was showing it to every one of our friends and they were never in the same room at the same time. So the amount of times I watched that in that time, but it has this like, it's unfortunate because it kind of starts with this like documentary style that doesn't quite fit the film, in my opinion. But once you get past that into the actual like found footage aspect of it, it's a really solid found footage movie. It's creepy. It's got like these moments where it has like what you look for in a found footage horror movie. It has the suspense and like the things that like a handy cam kind of do, right? It has some terrifying imagery that's like simplistic, but it's still there. And it's haunting enough that it follows along. It has those moments of like, oh my God, where's that sound coming from? We better go check it out. And the chase and then like, you know, the spooks out of that. It's just done in a solid way where, like I said, it's the lowest quality of the films on here, but I've watched this every year since I first saw it. And like every time I watch it, I just increase the star ratings for it because I enjoy it so much. And I think part of why this movie is so underrated is because the found footage genre is both maligned by a lot of people and also just like the best found footage movies are so high above every other movie.
Yeah. Subgenre. That's why if I see a movie as found footage, I literally won't watch it at this point. Because I feel like every found footage movie at this point is just crap. I feel like so much. So this is, I mean, I'll check this one out. I'd never even heard of it until you said something. Because yeah, Blair Witch was such a masterpiece. And then I watched Paranormal Activity and don't like Paranormal Activity. And it's like, well, if that's the next best we got, oh no, what am I doing? Although, what is it? As Above, So Below. That one might have been able to make my list. I'd say that one just misses my list here.
I haven't seen that one.
I think that's As Above, So Below. I haven't seen it in so long, so I can't really remember it, but I think that's a found footage movie. Yeah, where they go to the catacombs.
Yeah. I remember getting a bit of hype. I just never got around to watching it.
It's a good watch. Like, it's not a masterpiece by any means, but it's a good watch. That's a found footage movie. No, it's a good watch.
I think there's actually something in there that really is unique to the horror genre, too. What you just said, like, it's not a masterpiece. Horror is the one genre where it doesn't seem quality matters as much to the people who love horror movies.
Yeah, I agree. There's a movie that as a kid, we would get from Blockbuster that my dad just picked up one time. It's called Death of a Ghost Hunter. And I've probably seen that movie 30 times. And it's a found footage movie. The acting is beyond atrocious. Like, it is so, 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 so bad. But it has an insanely creepy ending. And because the ending was creepy, we'd watch it like every Halloween time. Every time. So sometimes, like, yeah, with horror, like, I can sit there and I got a movie coming up pretty soon where it's like the acting is so meh. But you know what? It's a damn good movie. And that's what you need sometimes. I mean, we don't sit there. I mean, look, I understand at this point everybody loves Campbell, whatever the hell his name is. You know what I'm talking about. Bruce Campbell. Thank you.
Bruce Campbell, yes.
Everybody loves Bruce Campbell. But, like, he's not the best actor in the world. That's not why he's not in that much. But that doesn't take away from your enjoyment of The Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2. So, no, I like it. I like it. Somebody just put in here The Invitation from 2015. This is Kevin Hernandez. Have you ever seen this movie?
I have.
I have not seen it.
I was just double checking. It's a pretty solid one. I'm pretty sure I have a rating for it on
Michelle Hoosman, who is Dario Naharis, the bad Dario Naharis. And by the bad Darian Harris, I mean, he's just not at screen, whatever.
No, I gave it 3.5 stars.
Okay, so you liked it a lot. So maybe this should make your list.
Well, every one that did make my list is a 4-star movie, in my opinion.
Oh, okay.
So.
Okay. Nice.
I was pretty stingent with my list this time. But, okay. Yeah, no, the Invitation's pretty good. John Carroll Lynch is in that movie and is fantastic in it.
I mean, John Carroll Lynch, you can't name a movie he's bad in, so yeah, exactly. That helps.
But yeah, no, it is one of those movies that you get to the end and you're like, my God.
Yeah.
Like, it has a very good ending, which I will not spoil, but definitely a great suggestion there, Kevin.
All right. Well, it just took me an hour and a half to type in my number 9, so hopefully, hopefully I spelled everything right. Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yeah.
This is a fun one. This is just Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch. They are pretty much the entire movie. Obviously you have the actual Jane Doe. Other than that, there's really nobody else in this movie. It's like all pretty much takes place in one scene. It's Andre Overdahl, who is the guy who directed Scary Stories Tell in the Dark, which sucks. The Last Voyage of the Demeter, which is pretty good, but nobody saw it. And then Troll Hunter was really, really put him on the map. But what I love about the Autopsy of Jane Doe is that it is a super simple story. Mm-hmm. And it's just creepy enough. You have two coroners dissecting a body, right? Like the person is dead under mysterious circumstances and they're trying to figure out why. And that's just a creepy premise. It just works. Like you go into that movie, you don't know what to expect and you're into it. The ending is a little cheese ball. Like, I don't necessarily love the ending of it. I think the payoff works, but I don't think I don't know if the payoff is like the greatest thing in the world. But it works for what the story of the movie is. And I just think like the performances are great. I mean, Emile Hirsch and Brian Cox are both phenomenal actors. And so it's just a fun movie. And if you haven't checked it out, I feel like this was one of those movies that when it came out, what was the year on that? 2016. Yeah. So 2016. So it came out in 2016. I feel like it got like a little bit of a push, but not enough. It made $6 million. The budget wasn't very high. And it was distributed by Lionsgate. So like the thing with Lionsgate is they try to take these like smaller movies like this and then blow them up into these massive box office sensations. When it doesn't happen, it just ends up on Prime at some point. You got to watch it there. So that's how I watched it. And just a really, really, really entertaining movie it's a good mystery. So yeah, that gets here at number 9.
And that is my one complaint about the movie, actually, is that like the mystery aspect of it is so much more compelling than when the spooky stuff actually starts happening in that movie, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think like the first three quarters of that movie is absolutely fantastic, anchored by Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch's performances and just their chemistry, the way they work off each other, the way they play off each other. They play this like father-son role really well. And it's very compelling as they're explaining everything that's going on, and it's framed in a way where it makes sense for them to be explaining everything because it's an autopsy, because they have to, you know, record everything for the autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting there as an audience member, like, they're right. This does defy logic. Why is this happening? And as it all unfolds, it makes a lot of sense, and it is quite good. I do enjoy this one quite a bit.
Yeah. I like going through the comments here. We just had Kevin Hernandez, one of the few horror remakes I think is better than the original, The Crazies 2010. The Crazies 2010 is a good movie. I think the problem with The Crazies is when that came out, people really liked it. And I remember it so vividly when it came out, because that was when I was in my senior year of high school. So I remember people like loved that movie. So for me, that didn't even cross my mind as a as an underrated one. Like, John, you were saying these are 4-star movies for you. I don't hit a movie in my top 50 horror movies until we hit number 10, 9, 8. Until we hit number 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. Number 6. It takes all the way to number 6. So for me, it's a little bit different. I do like some basic horror movies. I guess I have basic taste in horror. And then Trev Herod here said Black Phone and Late Night with the Devil are more modern horror movies that were decent. So just throwing everything out.
Yeah, I still haven't seen the Black Phone. Late Night with the Devil, I did really enjoy. It's a very different take on a horror movie. Definitely worth a watch. And 2010's The Crazies was the first Blu-ray I ever purchased.
Interesting. Look at you.
Yeah, what do you know?
Okay. All right. Why don't I go first on this one, John?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Right? Because you went first last time.
Yeah, we're staking it. I did last time, right?
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Although my number 7 is one that we both have, so I'll probably just do that one first too. All right. Number 8 for me is one of the most fun horror movies you'll ever watch. Dead End. Dude, what a freaking fun movie this is. absolutely one of the most fun movies you will ever watch in your entire life. And this is, okay, other than Ray Wise, nobody in this movie can act. And Ray Wise, who all of you would know as Leland Palmer from Twin Peaks, he is so over the top, but it's so good. Like, he is playing the Leland Palmer type character where he's just leaning in really hard. Every other actor on the screen is cringeworthy the entire time. But this movie is creepy as hell. It keeps you in the dark the whole time, where you're like, what is going on? And it is so damn compelling. It rips. Like, this movie just rips. Here's what's insane, John. We talk about this all the time with DVD sales, right? $900,000 budget for this movie, right? Mm-hmm. $900,000 budget. I need to just, like, this is crazy. It ends up making $75 million.
What?
Because of DVD sales.
This is why we need DVDs back. This is why physical media is important, everyone.
Dude, it literally ends up making, I don't know what it actually made, like, at the box office, but it made more than $75 million. Oh, it's direct to DVD.
Oh, there you go.
What it was. This was a direct to DVD movie and made $75 million.
Rightfully so. I'm going to say, this is one that you sent me your list and I had never heard of before. I watched this and it is such a wild ride. It is so fun. It is, like you said, Ray Wise is the only one who can act at all in this movie. The script is pretty terrible. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, first, I will say this. The script is very compelling. The script, the writing for the dialogue is terrible, but the actual story is quite good.
It's an interesting premise. It's an interesting premise that we actually kind of saw a lot in 2004, if I recall correctly.
2003, but yeah.
Yeah. A lot of similar stories coming out about that time. But, I mean, I was watching this movie, and I just kept texting you in disbelief at the things that were happening in this movie, because it is just one of those things that you can't truly comprehend as you're watching it. It's ridiculous. It's so fun. It's so, for a movie that's essentially, I mean, like, this is a road trip movie, essentially. And it is the most bizarre road trip movie you'll ever watch.
It's so good. Raptor here. I love Ray Wise. I mean, dude, like, this is one of those movies anybody I can tell to watch it. So I saw this movie. This was another one. You pick it up at Blockbuster. Yeah. You watch it a million times, right? Every time. And then I hadn't seen it for years. So last year, earlier this year, when did I watch it? It was recent. I just sat down and I threw this movie on and I was like, let's see if it holds up. Like, let's, and they start acting and I'm like, oh no, they ain't holding up. Oh shit. This sucks. Oh God, what's happening? And then the story keeps getting, I'm like, no, I love this. Like, it's so damn entertaining. If you're looking for a new, or like a movie you haven't seen, right? Like, you're looking for a new horror movie to watch this year, a new one that is just going to be, your mom and dad will watch it. You can watch it. Anybody can watch it. Like, it's just nonsense. It's not going to scare the pants off of anybody. It's not going to get you to the point where it's like, you know, oh God, how am I going to get through the rest of this movie? There's nothing super gross in it, but it's so damn good. Like, and the ending, and I don't want to spoil the ending, but the ending comes at you and you're like, how did I not see that the entire time? No. Is that a cop out? And then you just turn it off and you're like, no, that's a brilliant ending. Like, that just works. This movie is so good. I'm so happy that this made $75 million. In DVD sales. And this is why these movie companies, these studios, they've butchered themselves. They've killed themselves because they don't have home video anymore. Now it all goes to streaming. And if you don't catch it right away, it disappears and you never find it. And a movie like Dead End didn't even get a theatrical release because nobody thought anybody would see it. Its world premiere was Singapore on October 22nd, 2003. That's on the cover of the DVD box. It tells you that because nobody gives a shit about this movie. And it is unbelievably entertaining. That's my number 8.
It is. And it's, you know what? It's added to my Christmas movie watch list from now on.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be one of my Christmas classics from now on, for sure.
Yeah, I guess I didn't even say what the plot was. Essentially, a family is driving to their in-laws for Christmas. And he decides to take a different route than he usually does. and they can't get off the road. Dun, dun, dun. It's so unbelievable. Dude, I want to watch it again. Like it's October 7th. I got 3.5 weeks. I'm probably going to watch it again. I love it. When did I watch it last? It's important to know. I mean, I only gave it 3 stars because at the end of the day, I'm a snob. It was last October. I watched it October
27th. No, I gave this 4 stars when I watched it.
Yeah, see, I'm a snob when it comes to acting and stuff, but it deserves more.
Yeah, it's just so fun. It's one of those ones that, again, like with horror movies, like the acting doesn't matter. It's just the feeling that you get after watching the movie.
Dude, the woman in white is actually terrifying in this movie.
Yes.
100%. Like oh, it's so good. That one puts a smile on my face. All right, John, what do you have at number 8?
Number 8, I also kind of have one of these like campy horror movies here that maybe some people have heard of. It's definitely a cult classic. It's been around for a while. It's 1979's Phantasm.
Is that with an F or a PH?
PH.
Okay.
It is... I don't even know where to begin with this movie. It is this movie about this boy and his older brother in this community, and they... like one of their friends dies and they go to the funeral and stuff. And the younger brother thinks he sees somebody like stealing the corpse to do stuff with it and everything. Mm-hmm. And it turns into this wild story of conspiracy of like this tall man who is this, I guess, undertaker at the funeral home, who is actually honestly one of the best horror villains of all time. There's these like strange hooded creatures running around and like trying to kill people. It is an insanely wild ride. It's so much fun. It definitely feels of the era. It's a late 70s, early 80s horror movie. It has some moments that look great. The sphere, like the orb, whatever you want to call it, is mm-hmm. just like some of the best kills in horror movie. Or from this movie, it's so fun. And immediately, as soon as I watched it for the first time last year, I was like, this is definitely one of my favorite horror movies. It's just so wild.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about this one, and this was one that just like has always missed on me. Like it's mm-hmm. always missed my, like every time horror season comes around, I always try to watch at least like one or two new ones. I get stuck in my, you know, I want to watch The Descent, I want to watch Rosemary's Baby, I want to watch The Exorcist, I want to watch Psycho. Like I always try to find time for at least those movies. The Shining, but really The Shining you can watch anytime. You watch The Shining in winter, you don't need to watch The Shining just specifically there. So for me, like this is one that's always, I've always heard of, and I've just never found the time to actually sit down and watch it.
And I think that's the big thing that like compelled me to put it on my list here is that I think it is one of those movies that even now people will like scroll past on Prime when they're like trying to find a movie and stuff. And they'll be like, oh yeah, that seems interesting, but I'm going to watch something else instead. And we're so far removed from when it was popular that people just it's kind of losing its appeal because it's just kind of fading into the past, but it shouldn't. It is honestly, if you just want a fun horror movie, this is a good one to like watch with a group of friends and just have a good time watching.
Yeah. So my number 7 is Lake Mungo, and you have it too. And we did this for our patrons. We talked about it very in depth over there. We did a full half hour podcast. This was on October 1st, which by the way, tomorrow, if you want to become a patron, $5. We do $5 Tuesdays every week. We go deep into a movie. We do like a half hour about a specific movie. Tomorrow's movie is going to be Possession. So we're doing horror movies all month long. And then next week we're doing The Orphanage, which is J.A. Bayona, which I love that movie. But with Lake Mungo, John put it on his list and I was like, oh, well, let me check that out. It was only 80 minutes long. I had some time. So I was like, let me just watch it. And that movie, that is one of your, it's a mockumentary. So it's not found footage, although there is some found footage, but it's a mockumentary more than anything. That movie will surprise the shit out of you. It just keeps going. And that was one that didn't have a good box office run. Nobody really talks about it. It's buried on Amazon right now. But it's a very entertaining movie. And the Lake Mungo scene, we talked about this in the Patreon. The Lake Mungo scene is so terrifying. Like it is so unbelievably scary. But you just have to watch it. Like it's such a good movie. Like it really is such a damn good movie. So, Lake Mungo, I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more when we actually get to yours, but I have it here at number 7.
Yeah. Yeah, I do have it quite a bit further up the list because I quite enjoy that movie. But my number 7, sometimes the best way to be underrated is just not be an American movie. Mm. So my number 7, this is actually kind of my Saw allegory here too, is 1997's Cube.
Mm.
This is very similar to Saw 2 in premise. Group of strangers find themselves in this.
Cube.
Is the best way to put it. And they have to figure out a way to get out. It has like some very stereotypical characters. It has a very aggressive police officer. It has this math savant child. It has a like mothering older woman. And they find themselves, they just wake up and they're in this cube. And it's a science fiction horror movie for sure. They have to navigate this cube and like try not to die from the traps and everything. It is honestly such a fun movie. There's a lot of math. So if you don't like math, you might not like it that much. But like, there's a lot of talk about like,
that's the horror. People are scared of math.
Yes, that's what exactly. It is.
I do think too, this is probably a good time to preface this because you just said not be an American movie. We were not allowed to choose non-English language movies for this because in 2 weeks, John and I are doing a top 10 non-English language horror movies. So that's going to be our one podcast in 2 weeks. So that's why we're not doing any non-English movies. So he can have a movie that's from wherever this movie's from, but they have to speak English. Otherwise it doesn't count. So that's, if you're wondering like how you only have American movies on here, how do you only have that? That's why.
Yeah. It's from Canada. It's a Canadian film.
Boo.
Which you can tell. There are some very obvious Canadian things in this script. There's like French jokes and stuff like that. At the expense of the French, obviously. But it's just such a... What I really enjoy about this movie, and one of the things I really enjoy about horror in general and just the way that it works, is horror, at its core, is about dissecting society. It's quite similar to science fiction that way, right? Where it has to be this reflection of society. And a lot of horror movies, you have like isolationist horror, which deals with like people in a confined space. And you have, in this instance, people in a confined space, but they have to cooperate. And how do they cooperate? What is this microcosm of society that we have built in this cube, and how will it function together? It's very interesting because I watched this like last week, and then I watched it again this past weekend with some friends of mine because we were just like, yeah, let's watch Cube. That's a hype movie. And it's just one where you're watching it and you're conversing about, okay, but why are these the people in the cube? Because you're not really given answers in this movie. So it's just really interesting to be able to have those conversations about a movie after seeing it and just trying to watch these people navigate not only these death traps that are around them, but also each other.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. That sounds like a good watch, John. And it looks like it kind of has like the look of like a City of Lost Children and whatever your what's the movie? Dark City. Dark City. It kind of has that look to it a little bit.
It kind of does. It kind of does. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What do you have? What's your number 7? Did your 7. What's your number 6?
My number 6 is another Canadian movie.
Stop.
I have a few of them because I know they're underrated because they're Canadian. This one you might have heard of though. This is 1979's The Brood.
You said it like I would have heard of it, and I have heard of it, John, because I read your list.
Yes. But this is a David Cronenberg film. Mm-hmm. And David Cronenberg is, I think, one of the most underrated directors when it comes to horror movies. And there wasn't a way I was going through a top 10 underrated horror movies without putting a Cronenberg movie on here. Obviously, a lot of people know The Fly. I think we're getting to a point where Videodrome is pretty well known as well. So, but I had to go with actually like my personal favorite Cronenberg, which is The Brood. This is another movie about divorce, which I've realized has a theme in the horror movies I like. So, you know, sometimes life imitates art, right? Or art imitates life. Both, I guess. But I don't know. I'm divorced is what I'm getting at. And watching these movies makes me feel seen. David, this one is like, specifically, David Cronenberg wrote it after the divorce with his first wife. You can feel it. You can feel the tensions here. And it's not quite as like extensively body horror as some of Cronenberg's other works are, but it still gives you that just that amount, and it has this like these weird these like evil children in this movie are actually terrifying. It's one of those things where it's like for a movie that is like primarily set during the day, man, those monsters are terrifying.
Yeah, I've never seen The Brood either. So this is the thing with a lot of John's movies. I haven't seen them, but I think that's kind of like the point, right? When you're doing underrated movies, because it's like I didn't have the time to go and watch everything on John's list the way he had the time to go and watch everything on mine. And you know, that's because I'm American, he's Canadian, so I work like 100 hours a week and he lives his life. That's really the main difference between the two of us right now. But this is another one that's definitely on my list. I mean, I will say, for as much of like a movie person as I am, David Cronenberg is a pretty big blind spot for me. I haven't seen a lot of his movies. And I'm talking like some of his bigger ones. Like I've obviously seen Eastern Promises. I've seen A Dangerous Method. I saw History of Violence. But like I haven't seen Crash. I haven't seen Videodrome. I haven't seen The Dead Zone. So like he is a big blind spot for me. I mean, The Fly is a masterpiece. Like his version of The Fly is just the look of Jeff Goldblum in that movie is just incredible.
Grendelfly is one of the best monsters ever in a horror film. So it makes sense.
It's just unbelievable. But anyway, I'll have to check that one out. Again, another one. Did you watch this one, John? So you watched all of my movies?
I watched all of your movies, yes.
Okay. We got Frailty.
Yeah.
Another fun one. And that's, I guess, what my thing is with a lot of my horror movies. And I guess that kind of runs out. Now, the next one I consider fun too, even though I know you hate it, but that's okay. The thing with my list is I think a lot of fun horror movies get overlooked by people because you either catch on as a cult like horror comedy or like just like a cult following because you're so goofy or over the top. But then there's a lot of like kind of normal ones that just get kind of looked past. Bill Paxton directed this movie. It's Bill Paxton and Matthew McConaughey. And this movie is about the God's Hand killer. And it's about a Matthew McConaughey goes into a police office at the beginning of the movie. And he says, you know, I want to report that I know where the God's Hand killer is. And he starts telling the story of his childhood with his dad, who was a serial killer, who felt that God was reaching out and touching him and having him kill demons on Earth. It sounds kooky and over the top, but really it's just a serial killer movie. And it's freaking creepy. And it has an amazing ending, like impeccable.
It does. Yeah.
And it is such a well-written movie. So this was a really fun one for me. And I also like the idea of just like, you know, crazy people in the Midwest. That's a fun thing for me.
Yes, of course. Crazy people in the Midwest. It's a very common thing in movies. This movie, it was very interesting. The one like big downside for this movie, there's so much voiceover.
And see, I don't mind voiceover in these types of movies.
That's fair.
Because he's telling the story.
Yeah. And that is the narrative thing. I just think like I felt it was a little unnecessary. But I will say, the child actors in this movie are surprisingly good.
They're really good.
They really compel it. But Bill Paxton really just like takes the
lead here. Bill Paxton wrote this movie or whatever so that he could just be the star of this movie. That's all he wanted.
Yeah, and he's so good in this movie. And there are a lot of questions the entire time. Like you find yourself questioning, is God talking to this man or is he crazy? And that's the sign of a good horror movie. If you have to question things to see like whether or not things are actually happening, that's the sign of a good horror movie.
I agree. Love myself some Frailty. Yeah. It's a good hidden gem in Matthew McConaughey's repertoire. A lot of people don't know about that movie.
For sure. Well, because it also came out, what? It was 2003 this one came out?
2001.
2001. So it's like right before Matthew McConaughey started getting big again. Right, like
I mean, that's well before Matthew McConaughey started getting big.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is like Matthew McConaughey's career is kind of all over the place. Obviously, he has like Dazed and Confused towards the beginning of it, and
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days was 2003.
Yeah, so like that's when he really got into his like chick flick era.
Yeah,
with that sidetrack for Sahara as an action.
The Wedding Planner was 2001.
Yeah, so like this was Matthew McConaughey kind of coming up again, but well before he started getting the respect he. Rightfully
deserved. Yeah, the problem was got male audiences weren't going to see Matthew McConaughey in a movie at that point.
Yeah.
So, and women weren't going to see Frailty. So anyway, I guess I'm at number five, huh? Because you've gone first the last couple times, so yep. I'll go first here. All right, hang on one sec. I gotta take this off, edit it, copy, paste, boom, save, run it. Five. All right, my number five. Sorry, I forgot to copy and paste it before, so I didn't have all the movies. My number five, a movie that I don't care that John didn't like. I have The Ruins. This is a fun, stupid, damn horror movie. And sometimes you need a good, fun, stupid horror movie. That's what this is. That's what I like about it. John gave it 1.5 stars. John has no taste. He has absolutely no taste. Here's your log line. Americans Amy, Stacy, Jeff, and Eric look for fun during a sunny holiday in Mexico. But they get much more than that. After visiting an archaeological dig in the jungle. Dude, this movie is so over the top. I love the fact that vines are killing people. This movie legitimately does have some incredibly disgusting moments, like incredibly disgusting with the vines and stuff crawling through. I think this movie is super entertaining. I love it. Jenna Malone, can't get enough of her. She's not in enough movies. I love The Ruins. I got it number five. This came in on my horror movies, just to show how much better my taste is again than John's. On my top 50 list, this comes in at 45.
Wow.
And what's funny is the question that was just posed here by Kevin Hernandez, what side of the fence are you guys on with It Comes at Night? That's my number 47. So I like It Comes at Night. I don't think it's underrated though, because I think it was really well received when it came out. I just think some people absolutely hate it.
And those people are wrong, because that movie is quite good.
Yeah. So anyway, The Ruins, 45. I have it above Frailty. Yeah.
The Ruins, not so good, in my opinion. I think this movie's just lacking. You know what? As like a quick 90-minute horror movie, it is what it is. I just feel like it never really gets there for me. It's missing something. Either the people...
For me, this is the best young hot people go and do young hot people shit movie that for horror that's ever been made.
Sure.
It's young hot people who are bored and look at us and they go and it's actually disgusting horror because they're not being put in a situation of being tortured by people or stranger danger or anything like that. It's like, no, like this is gross. Like it's just a disgusting movie. I love it.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. And the whole plant aspect of it is a very unique turn for a horror movie. It's really telegraphed the entire time. It's quite obvious what's happening. Mm-hmm. My problem is it's lacking one of two things, in my opinion. Either some sort of history for what the heck is going on with this plant, or it's lacking this group of hot people turning on each other, because they don't really turn on each other.
No, they don't really turn on each other. And I'm okay with not getting the history, because why would they get the history? They're stuck at the freaking ruin.
Because then that way you just have someone like explaining it at some point. I don't know.
Boo.
A little bit of exposition in the film. How dare they?
Don't want it. Don't need it. My exposition is they have vines growing through their body and they're becoming part of the ruin. I love it.
Okay. Yeah. It makes sense.
You know what though? I need people like you to hate this movie so that I can keep saying it's underrated.
Yeah, exactly.
So thank you. You are serving your purpose. I need you.
I'm fulfilling a role here. Just like, you know, everyone in this movie fills a role. Just like this guy who looks like Tom Holland. It's weird.
Yeah, long before Tom Holland was a person.
Yeah, I know. He looks like this combination of like Tom Holland and Jamie Bell. And it's just, it really threw me off.
Yeah, dude. It's a good movie. Missing out. All right, John. What's your number five?
Well, I'm going to be quick on my number five because it also appears on your list. It is 2009's House of the Devil.
Yeah, well, now that It Follows is gone, House of the Devil might be even higher, John.
I'm aware. I understand how that works. This is a Ty West film. It surprisingly hasn't picked up a lot of steam despite like Ty West boom after X and Pearl came out. This to me is Ty West's best film by a lot.
It's not even close.
It's a slow burn. The amount of time and effort Ty West put into this to make it feel like an 80s movie and not just like a movie set in the 80s, a movie made in the 80s. It's very similar to like what Alexander Payne did with The Holdovers.
Yeah. This movie, and we will talk about it more, so we should probably hold off. But like, to me, this movie's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
It is shot like it's in the 80s. It looks like it's in the 80s. Jocelyn Donahue is pulled straight out of the 80s. Somehow Greta Gerwig is in this movie.
That's a thing. 6 minutes.
Tom Noonan is phenomenal. And we'll talk about it in a bit. But the ending of this movie is one of the most terrifying sequences ever.
Yeah.
Like ever. It is so good. But we'll talk about it in a little bit. John's got it at 5. He's too low. All right. So since that was quick, what's your number 4?
It's Lake Mungo. We'll go back to it.
Oh my God. So now you just went back to back with the duplicates. Way to go.
That's not my fault. Lake Mungo, I mean, we've already talked about it, and there isn't much we can really talk about it beyond that. That won't spoil the movie. And this is really a movie you should see. It's 80 minutes. Go watch it. I think it's on Amazon down there, right, Phil?
It is on Amazon down here, yes.
It's an Australian film. And that's part of the reason why a lot of people haven't seen this movie. Again, it feels, I think a lot of people would misclassify this as a found footage movie when it is a mockumentary. I think the big selling point behind this movie is because it's this mockumentary style, all these performances feel so real. They just feel like real people in this movie. And I think that really does a lot to elevate it and makes it so that this is the type of movie that you're watching and you're like, okay, this isn't that scary. But then it sends chills down your spines when you think about it and when you talk about it. And
yeah,
just now, like
we were talking about the ending on the Patreon, and I had chills and was really showing, like, look at this. Like, look at my arm.
And it's like we're not even getting into details right now. Just thinking about it is sending shivers down my spine. This is the type of movie that sticks with you and makes you continually look over your shoulder.
Yeah, it does. It'll stick with you long after it's over. Lake Mungo is very good. And it's one of those where you think that they're revealing too much. I thought they were revealing too much too fast. And it turned out they weren't. And you were speaking of Australian movie. Have you ever seen Better Watch Out? Kevin Hernandez threw that one up too.
Yeah, that's the like Christmas slasher, like home invasion slasher movie, right?
I don't know.
I wasn't too high on it. I have some friends who are very high on it. I wasn't a big fan.
All right. So you did your number 4. So I'm on my number 4.
Yes.
A movie I've been praising for a while, man. Exorcist 3. Do you have this on your list?
No, I intentionally left it off because I knew it was going to be on yours.
Okay. Even though we both had Lake Mungo and House of the Devil, but what are you going to do? Exorcist 3. Okay. So here's the problem, right? So the first Exorcist masterpiece, people will try to be like, it's not scary now. It's like, okay, grow up. Congratulations. You're not scared by the Exorcist. Like, woohoo. Here's a cookie. Leave me alone. Don't talk to me anymore. The Exorcist was groundbreaking when it came out in 1973, like literally broke the mold of horror movies, blew people away. The religious horror, you got to remember 50 years ago, people were much more religious than they are now. Like it had the impact. Nobody had ever seen Linda Blair with the head spinning around and shit like that. It's unbelievable. Then they make The Heretic or whatever the fuck it's called. Yes. What a steaming pile of shit. What a horrible, horrible disaster of a movie. Ended Linda Blair's career overnight. It's just a disaster. Like, there's no reason that movie should exist. And that's normally what happens when you make sequels. So then they're like, hey, let's go the Godfather route. We had a movie come out in 1973. We had, where is The Heretic? The Heretic's not even on here. What the hell? Where the hell is The Heretic? The Exorcist... Heretic. I can't even find it on. Okay. 1977. Okay. So then it comes out in 1976. Go to 73, 77. And when the sequel comes out, everybody's like, that movie was bad. We never need another one. And they were like, let's do the Godfather thing. Let's make another one, but let's wait until 1990 and then we'll make another one. William Peter Blatty directed this one. And William Peter Blatty wrote this. And he's the one who wrote the book for the original Exorcist. He gets George C. Scott in the lead. He gets Brad Dourif. He gets Jason Miller back. And this movie is dynamite. Like, this movie is so awesome. George C. Scott is great. It's more of a mystery than a horror. Like, that's the crazy part about this, right? Like, it's more of a mystery movie. You don't really know what's going on. You know, who's the one who's killing? And is Jason Miller really back? And, you know, we see Father Karras or... It's not Father Karras. Yeah, it is. Father Karras. We see him jump out the window at the end of the first one. We know he's dead. Is he really still alive? Like, what's going on? And the mystery around that is just incredible. And this movie has two of the best jump scares ever. The one jump scare is like the best jump scare ever. And it like redefine jump scares. But yeah, this movie's just great. I love it. It's so confidently made. And I've said this before. You can see that Jonathan Demme was so inspired by this movie when he made The Silence of the Lambs. There's a lot of fourth wall breaking. There's a lot of very like right in your face lines where you're like, what is going on? I think it's awesome. So,
yeah. I mean, The Exorcist 3 is honestly just like, when it comes to sequels, kind of on a level of its own. And yeah, part of that has to do with the fact that it's like very loosely a sequel and it's mostly its own movie. But Tracy Scott is phenomenal in this film, like absolutely ridiculous. His performance is so good. It is incredibly compelling just watching him go through this motion, thinking he's found his friend and he's like trying to find out if it's him, but is being toyed with by this person who also says that it's, you know, he's this killer, the Gemini killer that's been Gemini missing, killer, yeah, that's been gone for 50, that was supposed to be killed 15 years ago. And yeah, it's so good. Brad Dourif continues to be one of the most underappreciated actors of all time. His role in this is quite similar to his role in the first season of The X-Files in that one episode he's in.
I never saw it, so.
Oh, very, very similar vibes in the roles. A little different, but like performance-wise, quite similar. And it has literally the best jump scare of all time.
It does. The jump scare is terrific. Like, it's just really good.
If you've ever watched a horror movie list of best jump scares, you know this jump scare. It is always on there. Absolutely phenomenal. For Blatty to make this jump scare, it just showed his vision so well. The mastery of the camera work to make this jump scare work is just on a different level.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. I love the girl crawling on the ceiling too. That's the part that always freaked me out. I always felt like that was going to happen in my parents' house. I was like, oh, okay. Growing up, I'm like, oh, here it comes. All right. My next one is a movie that will not scare you at all, but it deserves its credit on this list because it does not get the credit that it deserves. And I almost wore the shirt tonight, but I forgot. And I'm really pissed at myself. So I'll wear it next week. Don't let me forget, John.
Okay.
It's The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, yeah.
The Creature from the Black Lagoon gets no credit. It gets no credit. It's Dracula, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein. Let's talk about the Wolfman. Nobody cares about Little Fish Man. That movie is so well made. And it is so good. Out of all of the Universal horror movies, I have Bride of Frankenstein as my number one. I mean, Bride of Frankenstein is the best one. I don't think there's really a question about that. But this one does not get the credit it deserves. Like, it just absolutely doesn't. And yeah, it's not a movie that's going to scare you. It's a creature feature. Like, it's not a big deal. But it's just like the underwater camera work in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so well made. And I'm not saying the other ones aren't, but this one, 1954, this movie like actually elevated movies. And it's so fun to watch. Like, it's good performances. It's an entertaining movie. It's got the melodrama. There's something cozy about this, right? Like, you watch The Ruins, you're not going to feel cozy watching The Ruins. But you watch this movie, you're going to feel cozy sitting on the couch watching this on a cool October night, getting ready for Halloween. Like, this is just a good late night movie. And yeah, it's my number three. I think it is supremely underrated. And people generally skip it when they watch the classic Universal horror movies.
Yeah, I think a part of that, I think, comes because it comes later, right? It doesn't quite fall into the earliest of the Universal horror movies. So I think that kind of goes against it. But what's so impressive about this movie is how they can turn this dialogue-less role of the creature into such a sympathetic character.
Yeah.
Like, you feel for this character. You have no idea what his motivations are. You just have this like vague idea based on what you're seeing, what these scientists are telling you must be going on. And it really puts you into a spot where it's like, well, should these scientists be, who's the real monster here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And that's just what good horror does, right? Like, I think I've said it before, when I'm looking for a villain, I need the villain to be compelling in some way. Like, a good villain has to at least get some sort of sympathy out of me so that I can see where they're coming from. The Creature from the Black Lagoon does that. It's this unknown creature, and just the way the movie's framed, it seems like it's doing all these bad things, But like, how bad is it when you consider the fact that these people are coming in and invading its homeland, right? Like, this movie just says so much, and it does it in a way films nowadays still lack when it comes to good character performances and things like that.
Yeah, that was what was cool about the Universal horror movies, like Frankenstein and this, like there's a humanity to it. Even the Wolfman, I mean, the performance doesn't hold up now. He comes across as a creep, but like the humanity of these creatures that's being lost, right? And I think that's what's really cool about this. I mean, Creature from the Black Lagoon is the one I always throw on. It's the best one. So that's how I feel. Anyway, what do you have at number three?
Well, my number three, we had a talk about remakes earlier, and who was it?
Talk about remakes in a second, too.
Well, yes. Kevin Hernandez said that 2010's The Crazies was like the best horror remake. I'm putting it out there that it's not, because the best is actually Luca Guadagnino's 2018 remake of Suspiria.
Mm.
And I know Suspiria, like Argento's original, is an absolute masterpiece. It's a classic. It is the pinnacle of Giallo. It is a film unto itself and one of my all-time favorite horror movies. Luca Guadagnino extends that movie by an hour, puts so much more emphasis on the dance aspect of it, and it's almost an entirely different movie because of it. Yes, it still has, you know, the same elements. It's still happening in like this dance school thing. It still has witches and everything like that. But this film is so well done. The dance sequences, the movements, it takes away kind of that. In the original Argento, there's a bit of like that discovery of like Susie trying to figure out what's going on. Luca Guadagnino does away with that, and Susie's just being part of it instead. Yeah. It's just like being brought into this fold. And Dakota Johnson, seriously underrated for her performance in this movie. She is so...
Well, the problem is Dakota Johnson just pretty much ruined her own career.
Well, yeah, I
mean, it's all Dakota Johnson can be underrated, but nobody wants to take Dakota Johnson seriously, and it's kind of her fault.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. But seriously, this movie is fantastic. Chloe Grace Moretz is in it for like a very limited amount of time, but it's also fantastic in this film. Tilda Swinton, it's Tilda Swinton. Like she's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Honestly, if you've only seen the original Suspiria, check this one out. It is so worth watching.
Well, I haven't seen this one mainly because of the length. That's what's kind of kept
it. It is a bit longer for a horror movie that it can be pretty off-putting because it is 2.5 hours long, but it's worth it. It is.
But speaking of Chloe Grace Moretz.
Yeah, I thought that might be a good segue for you.
It was. My number two is Let Me In, the remake of Let the Right One In. And I actually prefer this to Let the Right One In. And I love Let the Right One In. Like, I think Let the Right One In is fantastic. But I just think this is a better movie. Matt Reeves, we talk about Matt Reeves a lot on this podcast.
Yeah,
we both love Matt Reeves. Matt Reeves, he did, oh my God, he did the Planet of the Apes movies. I don't know why I was drawing a blank on that. Cloverfield, The Batman. Like, he does all these really, really good movies. Like, he takes subject matter that you feel like, okay, it's going to be ruined. And if you think about it, what's funny with him is other than Cloverfield, nothing he's ever done is actually original. Like the Batman's not original. And then the Planet of the Apes movies, like none of the stuff. And then you have Let Me In. But if it wasn't for him, these movies probably would be disasters. He's just so good at directing. You get Cody Smith McPhee and Chloe Grace Moretz playing the children in this. So we all know that they're phenomenal actors and actresses. Like they're so good. You get, oh my God, what's his name? Richard Jenkins.
Richard Jenkins.
You get Elias Koteas. Like Richard Jenkins playing the father in this movie is such perfect casting, like from Let the Right One In. And I actually prefer this movie. I think it's a little bit more graphic. I think it's a little bit, I don't know, like it. Every time you sit down and you watch a remake of a really well-received foreign movie, you know it's going to suck, right? The Secret in Their Eyes, one of my favorite movies of all time. They remake it. It's a piece of shit. And it happens all the time. So when I heard they were remaking Let the Right One In, I was like, oh my God, why? And maybe it was just misplaced expectations, which is why I have this one as high as I do. But it delivers. It absolutely delivers. And I think it's an absolutely fun, phenomenal, really good retelling of this movie. And honestly, it's unique enough that it deserves its own place. Like, it deserves to be considered a great movie on its own. It doesn't have to just be listed as a great remake. It's a great movie. And people don't talk about it because everybody talks about Let the Right One In. And everybody loves Let the Right One In. But nobody talks about Let Me In. And Let Me In definitely deserves the credit that it just does not get.
I think Let Me In kind of fell into this like hole in just everything that was going on. It was past the Asian horror remakes we saw in the like early and mid aughts. And because of that, people had kind of grown tired of, like you said, right? Like, it's this expectation that like, oh, it's a remake of a foreign horror movie, it's probably going to be bad, right? Mm-hmm. Can't all be like Funny Games, which is a shot for shot remake. But what this one does is it's still very similar to the original, but feels so different. Like, plot-wise, it's almost beat for beat the same movie.
Yeah.
But there is this darkness that Matt Reeves brings to this, and it's no wonder that he came out and made The Batman, and, you know, people raved about it. Because there's just this little thing about it that makes it so that it feels so much darker than the original, so much heavier, even though it's almost the exact same thing. The way Matt Reeves shoots this is stupendous. It's just goes to show how great of a director he is. And the fact that it, again, these two child leads are both coming off their like breakout roles at this point, right? Because
yeah,
Chloe Smith McPhee would have just been coming off The Road, and mm-hmm.
Chloe Grace Moretz was in so much. I mean, because she was in 500 yeah. Days of Summer. She was in
Kick-Ass.
Like, she was in a bunch. The biggest problem with this movie is it came out too soon after the original. The original came out in 2008. This came out in 2010. Nobody was asking for it. And this wasn't a time where Hollywood was being very lazy. It was a lot more people were starting to watch international movies at this time. They were so much more easily accessible. Theaters were starting to show them a little bit more. There was more interest in them. Yeah, exactly. And so what ends up happening is people sit down and they say, oh, I want to watch that movie. And then Hollywood says, oh, that was popular. Let's remake it. And they were turning out shit versions of these movies most of the time. Mm-hmm. And this is one case where that wasn't the case. This was also that time
where Hollywood started to really focus on Scandinavian cinema too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like shortly after this, we got David Fincher's Girl with a Dragon Tattoo as well.
Yeah.
Right. Like this was a time.
They were always going to make an American version of that though. That was,
I know, coming. But like,
yeah, that same year though, it was 2010.
Yeah. Yeah. Scandinavian movies just kind of like, well, Girl with Dragon Tattoo was 2012. Or 2011.
Was it 2012?
Yeah, well, David Fincher's 2010.
Oh, Fincher was Social Network. Yeah, it was Social Network. Duh. That just clicked in my head. Duh.
But yeah, this was just a time that like Scandinavian films became the hot thing all of a sudden in this time period.
There was something about the snow, man. It freaked people out.
As someone who has lived in snow, it can be freaky.
I mean, I'm about to get hit with a hurricane. We don't get snow here. So
yeah, I know.
Well, I want to answer. Thomas McGee said, how did Dakota Johnson ruin her career? Madam Web. And also the fact that like.
Well, also Fifty Shades of Grey, like really tanked.
Shades of Grey. She comes out and does that first. And it's like, well, we're not going to take her seriously. And then she tried to be more serious. And then eventually she does Madam Web. And it's like, holy shit. Okay, never mind. Yeah. Like, whatever. How'd you get your job? Oh, Don Johnson. You're related to Don Johnson. Okay, cool. All right, moving on. John, what do you have at number two? Do your two and do your one. And then I'll do my one because we both have my one. And we know what my one is.
Okay. We'll just save it. All right, so my number two, arguably, people might argue that this is an underrated. It had a like legacy sequel come out recently, or fairly recently, but it kind of felt like it had that high and then dropped off. But in the grand scheme of like the genre, Candyman, 1993's Candyman, just
one of the most. I let you keep this one. And I feel like a lot of people would be like, but everybody likes Candyman. I've never seen Candyman, and I feel like there's a lot of people out there who haven't. Like, this is one that people have heard of, and you've seen the poster for it and all of that. Yeah. It's kind of like Hellraiser, where it was really popular maybe at the time, but since it's kind of just like, oh. So, yeah, no, I allowed you to keep this one, even though I got rid of It Follows.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that, like, when we look at Candyman is kind of like a slasher movie, but not really a slasher movie. It's the... but it's this massive dissection into storytelling and myth and the power of stories while also looking at like gentrification. And it's so phenomenally made. Tony Todd, by far, as Candyman, is one of the most terrifying movie villains of all time. Like, the line, "Be my victim," oh, chills down your spine. It is so well done. And there is so much of this movie that isn't focused on this actual character and instead is just focused on, why can't I think of this right now? Virginia Madsen's lead character in this, like Virginia Madsen's Helen, is just, it's so well done. And just her investigation into this myth and how the investigation into the myth breeds the myth into existence. And that's the fascinating thing about this movie. The way it is, there are some genuinely terrifying sequences in this. I mean, everyone kind of knows about like Tony Todd and the bees and like actually having a mouthful of bees while filming this movie. Like,
insane.
Wild. It's just the extent that it goes through. Clive Barker's story is so well told. Bernard Rose does such a phenomenal job with his direction. It is honestly just one of those movies that's overlooked. And yes, like I said, it had a sequel that came out, I think, like 2 years ago at this point.
Was that a sequel or is that a remake?
It was
a remake.
It's a sequel. Really? It's like a requel, I guess, is probably the best way we could classify it at this point. But it's technically a sequel.
Set between, the second and the third one. Okay.
Yeah. But this is one that in the midst of the late 80s, early 90s, like slasher flicks, it's just so different than all of that. And it's coming kind of behind that big slasher push in the 80s and right before Scream reinvigorated the slasher genre. And it's so unique onto itself that it just doesn't get the attention it deserves. And even if like people have heard of Candyman, people have seen Candyman, people don't talk about it enough.
I agree with that. Nobody brings this movie up, really.
Yeah. And I think that's just what it comes down to. So I'm here trying to breathe this into existence that Candyman shouldn't be on this list. But y'all got to talk about this movie more for that to happen.
Yeah.
See, okay. Jay Byrne Aquatic right here. Has never seen Candyman. Proven the point.
Yeah. So what do you have at number one?
My number one is another Canadian film. It's a little Canadian film from 2000. It's Ginger Snaps. This is the best werewolf movie ever made. Like, no stop. Like full stop. The best werewolf movie ever made. It's dark. It's brooding. Emily Perkins and Catherine Isabel are both phenomenal as the two leads. These two sisters, just like these two death-obsessed sisters, and they're hitting puberty, but one of them's also a werewolf. It is unreal. It is so, so well done. It's just the way that this investigates puberty and like the transforming body that these people that people go through as they hit puberty, and they're dealing with all these like sexual all these sexual feelings, all the hormones and all of that. And at the same time, you also just want to murder people. That's a lot for a teenage girl to go through. And it's done so well. Mimi Rogers' mother, arguably one of the best horror mothers of all time. It has the investigation you need in a werewolf movie as Bridget is trying to figure out how to help Ginger as she snaps. But it's so well done. It's a small, very, very small movie. But this is one of those ones that a lot of people have never heard of, or a lot of people have heard of it, haven't watched it. But those who do watch it love this movie. Yeah, it's just on another level.
That's what's funny is like this one's like a cinephile movie, right? Like people know about this one and everything like that. I didn't know about this movie until you brought it up, and I knew about it. Like this was like a year ago, maybe even more at this point, but still like, it's like, yeah, just nobody talks about this movie. I think the werewolf genre in general just kind of gets overlooked. There's really not many good ones in that genre. Even out of all of like the old Universal horror movies, The Wolfman is the worst one, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, it just doesn't hold up at all. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I want to check this one out, but it's just funny. Like, this movie, $584,000 at the box office. Oopsie.
It's a small Canadian movie.
Yeah, but it was for a budget of 4.5 mil.
Yeah, well, that's like a half of Canada going to the movie theater, so...
Yep, too bad nobody else went. That's what I'm saying. So yeah. No, I'll definitely, I got to check this one out. I mean, this will be on my list this year. I'll watch this one.
Highly recommend it. And it's just what it does with werewolves. The reason why werewolves aren't compelling a lot of the time is because it's kind of like this duality of man that it goes with. Mm-hmm. And what's so interesting about this being a female focused werewolf movie, focusing on like the puberty aspect of it, it feels like it fits the genre so much better than anything else has ever done with werewolves. Yeah. And it's just weird because there aren't a lot of good werewolf movies. Mm-mm. When people talk about werewolf movies, they talk about a werewolf in London, an American Werewolf in London, and that's about it.
Which I have really high on my list.
Yeah.
Not on this list, but I have it at 21 on my horror list.
Yeah.
All right, my number one is House of the Devil. We already talked about it. We knew it was coming. It's anticlimactic, but that's what it is. This movie's not for everybody. It is a slow burn. Like, no, nothing scary happens in this movie. Nothing scary happens in this movie for 45, 50 minutes, and the movie's only like 80 minutes long. But like I said, the end of this movie is insane. It is so scary. And when you start to realize what's going on and that this poor Jocelyn Donahue has just been led to like the slaughter here, it's so good. And I love the style of it. Again, this goes back to like the cozy old school, you know, teenagers, you know, college kids. They're going to watch a house, and she's going to have some friends over. Well, she wants to have Greta Gerwig over. That's essentially it. But like, you know, she goes to this house. Sure, I'm going to take the money. It's really not that important. Like, whatever. And it's just an easy job. But it gets into that isolation of these people back then in the 80s and how this was a thing that was going on and they needed her. And again, the ending is terrifying. The fact that Greta Gerwig's in it is crazy to me. I just think it's super good. Like, it's just really good. And it's one of those, I understand that it's not going to scare you for 45 to 50 minutes, but it's so well made for those 45 to 50 minutes. You just have to appreciate it. And that is enough for me. And I like, as a movie, this is a great horror movie. I had it at 14 on my top 50 horror. But like, as a movie, it is so incredibly well made that if it wasn't a horror movie, you'd have the expectation of being scared and you just went into this movie to watch this movie for what it is. It's why wouldn't it be The Holdovers? You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, go watch. I've pretty much been saying this on this podcast since we started doing the podcast. Watch House of the Devil. House of the Devil. Yeah. It should have been It Follows as my number one, but I was talked out of it. But House of the Devil, It Follows, those are two movies that are modern movies that should be watched every Halloween season now.
Yeah. The thing that Ty West does best with House of the Devil is he just holds tension the entire time. You know something bad is going to happen this entire movie, and you're just waiting for it to happen. And yep. Ty West just shows the utmost patience in getting you there. It is, some people will find it frustrating. Some people won't like the style. Some people are just wrong. This movie is so good. And it's so good because of how long Ty West takes to get to a payoff.
What really blows my mind about this movie at this point now is that it is as old as it is. Like, this movie is at this point, actually, it was made in 2009. So it's actually 15 years old this year, which blows my mind, because I just said, you know, if you want a good modern horror movie, Let Me In is newer than this. Yep. But I don't know, man. Like, Ty West, Ty West is very hit or miss for me. I feel like some people really love Ty West. Some people really hate Ty West. There's very few people who are hit or miss with Ty West. I'm very hit or miss with Ty West. But this one knocks it out of the park. I love it. And it really captures like that Northeast feel too. Like that, like the leaves are blowing and she's got the wool hat on and like, it's so well done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just absolutely incredible. And honestly, the performances are just out of this world. Greta Gerwig's in this movie for like 6 minutes, like you said, but absolutely like your audience surrogate in this film.
Yeah. Oh, Kevin Hernandez says, will top 10s be coming on Mondays every other week? Yes, they will. So this one was a week behind because John's away next week. But on the 21st, John and I are going to be doing top 10 non-English horror films. So that's when we'll get into, you know, some of these movies that you're probably like, where the hell was Let the Right One In, or where was Raw perhaps, or something. There's a lot of movies that from the international scene that should have been on an underrated list, but we decided we'll just do two separate lists. So that'll be coming out, on the 21st. We'll be doing Possession for our patrons tomorrow. And then The Orphanage will be coming out on October 15th to give you a little taste of what's going to be in our top 10. So we're doing these based off of the top 10 now. So we did Lake Mungo last week. We got Possession coming out tomorrow. And then we'll have The Orphanage coming out on the 15th. So you can get a sneak peek of us talking about that movie, which is on my list for top 10 non-English horror. And then the week after, we'll be doing Pulse, which is on John's top 10. And then we'll have to do one more horror movie on the 29th just before. But those are all for patrons. The top 10 list will just be here. So anyway, that's all I got. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Let us know your top 10 list in the bottom here in the comments. So Raptor says, damn, that changes my list. Yes, you could put international ones in here, but we decided not to because otherwise it was going to be too similar back and forth between the lists. So anyway, thank you all so much for listening. Like the video, subscribe to the channel, and we will see you in 2 weeks.